It's Tuesday, the 23rd of February, 2016. Happy birthday to D'Angelo Russell and Andrew Wiggins. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and WonderDim. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like WonderDim, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can be that sponsor. Big shout out to WonderDim. They're one of the smaller demographic that lives in France. So thank you to all the international viewers and listeners to the podcast. I know, considering I'm in Australia, majority of you are international. I'm talking about non-US, non-Australian listeners. That is obviously you're in the minority, but thank you for all your contributions to the show as well. And WonderDim, you've been a great sponsor of today's show. Reminder, if you get 5 seconds, just leave a review on iTunes. It is super quick and it is super effective in helping this show grow. Okay, I think we've got a lot to talk about. I know that today's monstrous line of the night has been debated a lot. I got a lot of tweets about it today, about who's going to be the monstrous line of the night. I know that you can probably tell by reading the title of this podcast. So the, the anticipation is probably not there, but we'll save it for just a little bit of time before we get into that. Before we do it, we'll talk about, you know what? We can't do it yet. What am I talking about? I need to be introduced.
Let's get to it.
Thank you, Michael Bolton. We will get to it now. The Instagram contest for Monday, it was Reggie Jackson. How many points and assists was Reggie Jackson going to have? The answer was 27, and we had 3 people get it right. Jeff Party guessed 27. The_real_house_dad_of_Glendale also guessed it right. And Jackson JJ Jones. So 3 people on Instagram. So thank you to everyone who guessed, but thank you to those 3 guys who got it right. And then we had the Facebook contest as well. And who won that one? Here we go. It was Isaiah Thomas. How many combined points and steals? The answer was 19, and Chris Liu. So congratulations to Chris for getting it right. Today's contest will be on Instagram, Brandon Jennings. How many points will Brandon Jennings score? And on Facebook, we'll be looking at Damian Lillard. How many combined points and assists? So there is a couple of contests going there. Now, I wanted to do a quick shout out to a couple of people on Facebook who had some great comments going today. Josh Ellis and Justin Willis, big listeners of the show. I think they're both from North Carolina, if I'm correct. If I'm wrong, let me know, guys. But great banter back and forward on the Facebook page, and that's great. That's what the Facebook page is for, is for back and forward comments. They were both debating the monstrous line of the night. Josh thought that it should have gone to Al Horford. Justin thought that it should have gone to Steph Curry. I disagreed with both of them, and I went with Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis had, and this is a rare feat, he had his first triple-double for the second time this season. And I know I've tweeted that out, I've put it in the show notes, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, Giannis had his first triple-double this season back at the start of the year, and then the NBA a couple of days later took it away from him. They said one of the assists wasn't his, which it clearly wasn't. It was Michael Carter-Williams's, but initially he was credited with the triple-double. They took it away, but now he gets this one all to himself. This is and it wasn't just a triple-double, it was a massive, massive triple-double from Gianni. He went 27, 12, and 10, but he added 3 steals and 4 blocks, and he shot 12 of 17 from the field. That is huge from Gianni. And I had a question come in today from someone talking about Antetokounmpo today. What does he, I think it was, I'm never going to remember your Twitter name. I know you were a great listener, Noremiskilonon. I never know how to say it. You know who you are. We had a bit of a discussion today. It's Ewell Collins, and his Twitter handle is Noremaxnilok. Cool. He said, what does Giannis need to take his game to the next level? And the thing that he needs is 3-point shooting. He can't do it. We heard a lot of whispers in the summer. Oh, he's shooting the 3. He's shooting it at Euro. He's going to shoot 3s. Well, it hasn't actually panned out that way. He has hit a complete total of 16 3-pointers for the season. Yes, it's better than the 7 that he hit last year. It's well down on the 41 he hit as a rookie. He's not doing it at a very good percentage. And by very good, I mean he's shooting the 3 at 23%. It's better than the 16 from last year. But he needs to get that up. His season has been incredible. He's a top 30 player, which I didn't see coming. I knew I had, not that I didn't see it coming, I didn't see it coming necessarily this season, but he's been great, averaging 16, 7.5, and 3 over a steal a game, 1.2 blocks on 51 and 75%. So one of those players who every season his field goal percentage has gone up, his free throw percentage has gone up, and he's improved in basically every area apart from three-point shooting every season of his career. He looks like, for most of the time, he's the best player on this team. I would be shocked if he isn't the best player on this team. Chris Middleton's pretty good. Greg Monroe has his flaws. We know about Michael Carter-Williams. Jabari Parker's really coming on of late, but Giannis is the best guy here, I think, on this team, and he looks like he's going to be a top 30 player in fantasy leagues for plenty of years to come. If he adds a three-point game, we could be talking about a top 15 sort of talent. So Giannis has really stepped it up in this, his third season. With all the nightly awards today, we're skewing very young. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Justice Winslow of the Miami Heat. He moved back to the bench, but that didn't really matter because he still played 40 minutes in the overtime game for the Heat. He went 15-7-4 and had 4 steals, hit 5 of his 10 shots and 5 from 6 from the free throw line. He's a guy that I've been talking about for a while, and just say watch what happens for him in 12-team leagues because he's starting to get it together. The last three games have looked real impressive. 14-7.5 with 2 steals on 40 and 49% shooting. I mean, that's great. He's actually shot 53% from the field in the last month. I don't believe that that's all that real, but his last month's stats puts him inside the top 100. He, to me, is more of a 14-team must-own guy, but I reckon we're going to see him be a top 100 player from now until the end of the season, really starting to get things going a little bit more. I think the offense at 14 points a game and 11 points over his last 4 is a little bit misleading because when Wade is fully functional, which he did play today, so it was a good game with Wade playing, but if Bosch comes back, that is going to affect Winslow. I'm not expecting to see Bosch back. There's a chance that he comes back, definitely. I'm not expecting to see him, so that makes me more intrigued with Winslow. He's going to have, well, he's had a solid role all season. It just hasn't come offensively. Now it's starting to turn. He's starting to turn his upper-class defense into upper-class defensive statistics, averaging 1.3 steals over the last month, and that's something that a lot of players don't necessarily do. They can be great defenders without turning into great statistical defenders. He is turning into that. His rebounds over the last month, awesome. 7 boards a game for a guy who's a small forward. That's fantastic. He just needs to get the points going a bit more and maybe start hitting some threes. But for now, Winslow's definitely a guy that I'm watching, and I don't mind even adding him in a 12-team league just to if you need what he does and just to see what pans out. But he's looking pretty good at the moment, so let's keep an eye on him. I said that the awards were skewing pretty young. We went with another rookie for the Young Gun of the Night. Of course, this award has to go pretty young because it is the Young Gun of the Night, and it's a fairly familiar recipient. Karl-Anthony Towns of the Minnesota Timberwolves played 36 minutes. He went 28-13. He hit a triple, had 4 assists and 2 blocks on 13 of 22 shooting. That sort of line from Towns is what you're going to see from him in the future a lot. 28-13, a 3, 4 assists and 2 blocks. And I highlight this because, yeah, we've seen him get 2 blocks and 28-13 plenty of times. But hitting a 3 and getting 4 assists is going to become more of the norm than the exception for him as his career progresses, I think. You already know how much I think of him as a fantasy basketball talent, as a real basketball talent. There's a chance that it doesn't pan out for him and he doesn't really improve, but all signs point to yes at the moment for Karl-Anthony Towns, and he is... It's going to be hard to get him outside the top 5 next year. That's how good his fan. That's how solid and strong his fantasy stock is looking for next season. The dud of the night. I declared this guy back maybe on the weekend. I can't remember exactly when it was. Kyle Korver of the Atlanta Hawks was clearly not back in this game against the Golden State Warriors. Played 30 minutes and had 2 points. 1 rebound, 1 assist, and 1 steal. I'm not overly concerned about that. He still should be owned in pretty much all leagues. It was a stinker, no doubt, and his form of late's been good. Over 2 threes, almost 2.5, 1.2 steals, almost 10 points, and his percentage is up as well. Nowhere near the guy that he was last year, clearly, but still worth owning in most 12-team leagues. In 10-team leagues, not necessarily, but in your 12-team leagues, Kyle Korver definitely has value there. All right, let's look at the perfect DFS lineup for Monday. Monday's games, that's it. At point guard, Steph Curry, 59.2. it's hard to use Steph Curry in cash games. This was a situation against the Hawks where I did really like him for cash, and it paid off brilliantly. And Marcus Smart was fantastic, 38.3 in the Celtics. All of a sudden, extremely high scoring. I tweeted it out today. I'm going to go back and have a look at my my tweets because the stat was pretty amazing. Let's have a look. Okay, the Celtics scoring 100. It's from Sean Grunde who tweeted it out. He said, in the last 6 years, all right, the Clippers have gone. They've scored over 121 points 8 times. In the last 6 games, they've done it 4 times. In the previous 446 times, they've done it 4 times. Their scoring at the moment has been out of control. And Marcus Smart, not necessarily helping the scoring, but when they're scoring that much, guys are going to getting involved. And he put up a huge line here. He's got a tremendous amount of fantasy talent, I think, Smart. At shooting guard, Klay Thompson, 38.9, and JJ Redick in that massacre against the Suns, he put up 30.6. The small forwards, Antetokounmpo, went for 69.4, the highest scorer on the day, and Jay Crowder put up 45.3 in a career night for him, part of that Boston explosion. At the power forward position, two young guys, Gorgui Dieng, 38.4, Jabari Parker, 33.8. They're both in red-hot form. Dieng, especially when the coach decides to play him. And at center, Al Horford, 66.2. He was always in a pretty nice spot going up against the Warriors and turned in a tremendous line, one that was almost the monstrous line of the night. The total of that lineup would have gotten you 420.1 points, so that would have been relatively handy. I'm sure plenty of you won money anyway on DraftKings and FanDuel and Moneyball and wherever else you're playing today, but that would have been a pretty nice lineup, and it's not a completely ridiculous lineup to have chosen. People could have chosen that. The only guy I look at that and go, yeah, maybe, you're joking, is Marcus Smart. Everyone else, you could make it an easy argument. Yep, I can easily slot these guys in. Smart's the only one where I go, maybe, maybe not. But even so, he's had some pretty big games over the last month or so, and you know that upside for him to do that is there. Whew, it's pretty hot here in Melbourne today. If you guys who know the Celsius scale, I think it was about 37 today, which is roughly 108, I think, Fahrenheit. It's pretty warm. I feel like there's sweat beating on my forehead. If there is, let me know, and I'll see if I can mop it up. It is now time for us to take a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors, and then when we're back, we're going to be looking at all the games from Monday. That's the day, isn't it? Yep, Monday. All right, guys, we are back, and we're going to look at these games, and there was 7 games on. Really great schedule this week. Can't say enough about how pleased I am with the schedule this week, with no nights of games with more than 10 games, no really low-volume nights as well. This is how it should be every week of the season. I can't stress how much I love that enough. The Detroit Pistons and the Cleveland Cavaliers kicked things off. The Pistons with a huge victory. Reggie Jackson was solid again. 33 minutes, 23, 3 and 4, 3 steals, 3 triples. Really increasing his steals and threes this season. There's something, his assists have dropped, but those other areas where things were a bit of a detriment to his overall game and his fantasy game, but he has picked that up. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is obviously back to playing big minutes. 37 for him, 19 and 4, 2 triples and 2 steals on 8 of 10 shooting. That is as fluky as it comes for him. That is not who he is, so don't get overly excited to think he's going to be an 80% shooter all of a sudden. Toby Harris started with Anthony Tolliver, and Tolliver's going to be out for the next 2 to 4 weeks now. I don't imagine that Tolliver comes back and gets his starting job back. It is Toby Harris's, and he will play 35 minutes here on out. 14, 5, and 3 for Toby, 3 steals and a 3-pointer, while Drummond went 16 and 15 with 2 steals and a block, and a horrific 8 of 14. Actually, you know what? That's not horrific for him. 8 of 14 from the free throw line is all right. Stanley Johnson suffered a shoulder sprain. He was a guy that should have been dropped in 12-team leagues anyway. 10 and 4, a 3 and a block. If you needed any further impetus to drop him, this is it. A shoulder injury, it's not going to be too severe, but he's not going to get enough minutes. Marcus Morris played 40 minutes, 14, 2 and 4 with a 3-pointer on some pretty poor shooting, but at least he got to 14 points. But when you go 6 of 16, you'd hope you'd score at least 14. He is not a must-own guy. And if you didn't know, the Donatas Motiejunas, Marcus Thornton, Joel Anthony trade was voided by the Pistons due to Demo failing his physical. So Motiejunas and Marcus Thornton are now back in Houston. Joel Anthony heads back to Detroit. And the poor Sixers, they had to waive Jakar Sampson in order to accommodate Joel Anthony. The trade's voided. They don't get anyone. And Sampson's gone and he's signed with the Nuggets. But in all honesty, it's probably a net gain to get Jakar Sampson off your team. Darren Hilliard, He still played 11 minutes, so I do like seeing that Hilliard gets minutes, because I think he can be a decent rotation piece in a couple of years. On the Cavs, Kyrie Irving bounced back from his illness, 38 minutes, 30 points, 5 assists, 2 steals, and 3 three-pointers. Really, you know that I'm a big Kyrie fan. Kevin Love was good as well, 24, 7, and 3. And this is probably the worst LeBron game we've seen in quite a while. He played a shitload of minutes, 38, but was just terrible. 5 of 18 shooting. He went 0 of 4 from 3, and his 3-point shooting has been disgusting all season. 12, 8, and 5 with 3 steals. Not a great night for LeBron. And Matthew Dellavedova, in the games that Kyrie's been playing, Tyronn Lue hasn't been running Dally as a shooting guard. In this game, he did, with Shumpert out. Dally played 29 minutes, so he played behind Kyrie, and he played next to Kyrie. 7 points, 3 assists, and 2 steals. Still leave him, obviously, only for your deeper formats. Tristan Thompson, not his greatest night. 21 minutes for Thompson, 6 rebounds, and 1 block. No foul trouble. It's just an odd game, just a rotational game. But does this, I don't know the right term here. With Channing Frye finally playing and getting 9 minutes, does that mean they're going to limit Thompson to get Frye into the rotation? There's a possibility of that. If they're looking to get Frye 10 minutes, they need to take 10 minutes off someone. If they take 10 minutes off Mozgov, he's going to be playing 7 minutes a game. If they take it off Thompson, he goes from 30 to 20. Maybe that's what they do. Just watch this space. Let's see what happens in the next game as to what the Cavs do with Thompson. But that is definitely a possibility if they're looking to get Frye into their rotation. Now, Frye played 9 minutes, had 2 points and 4 rebounds. He's really only a very, very deep league sort of guy. Tim Mozgov had 7 boards in his 18 minutes. And J.R. Smith, just the 7 points in 36 for him. The Toronto Raptors and the New York Knicks, the Raptors with a very big victory here. Kyle Lowry with the second triple-double of the night, 22, well actually it was the first, 22, 11 and 11 with 2 threes. Unlike Giannis, he had no steals and no blocks, but awesome percentages going 7 of 13 from the field and 6 of 6 from the line. His big year continues. Unfortunately for Jonas Valanciunas, we didn't see him get the hat-trick of 30-plus minute games, but as per usual with him, he was still productive only in 25 of them. 20 points, 6 rebounds and a very out-of-character 3 blocks. His usual stellar percentages were there. You know that I'm a big fan of Jonas Valanciunas, even if he doesn't get to 30 minutes. DeMar DeRozan went 22, 3 and 2 with 3 steals. And Corey Joseph is starting to play pretty consistently at the moment. He had 13 points, he had 6 assists, but he also had a pair of threes, he also had a pair of steals, and he's starting to put up these decent-ish lines recently. Now, when Damari Carroll comes back, it hurts Joseph's value a lot. I still don't think that Joseph is a 12-team league guy. He's more of a 14 to 16-team league guy, but he is playing not bad, and especially if you need some assists. In his last 4 games, he's averaging almost 4 assists. In fact, in his last month, he's at 3.7. He gets you almost a steal and 12 points a game. So that's not horrific, but it's still more of a 14-team league guy. James Johnson, who started in place of Damari Carroll, played 27 minutes here, 12 points with 2 blocks. And a 3. We know he can have defensive outbursts, but he just hasn't been able to get anywhere close to the minutes recently. So I'll treat this one as an outlier. Patrick Patterson, 26 minutes for 5 points. That's why he's a risky play in DFS and in seasonal standard leagues. And Luis Scola had 4 points in his 20 minutes. And the Raptors continually, whenever they have a blowout, there's 4 guys. DeLon Wright, Lucas Nogueira, Norman Powell, and Anthony Bennett. They give him 2 minutes each. Every game there's a blowout. These 4 guys, let's just play 2 minutes. I don't know why they only play him 2 minutes, but that's what they do. That's just a standard thing with the Raptors. Bismack Biyombo went 10-9 with a block in 19 minutes. That's really good production in limited playing time, but he has to be a stream option only. On the Knicks, one player who's loving playing for Kurt Rambis, and that is Robin Lopez. 21-13 in 28 minutes, a steal as well, big percentages. He's obviously a must-own player and really picked up his game since he stopped being jerked around by inconsistent playing time. Amazing that if you play an inconsistent role, your play becomes inconsistent. Carmelo Anthony, 23, 11, and 5 with a triple. And Jerian Grant actually had a decent game, notching 4 assists and 9 points in just 12 minutes. Jose Calderon only played 19, and Langston Galloway played 25, and those two combined for 0 points. That point guard position is a disgraceful mess at the moment. No one is really a must-own in 12-team leagues out of Grant, Galloway, and Calderon. I would love to see them just go, okay, Jerian, you're playing the last 6 weeks, play him 25 minutes and see how it works out. But it's Kurt Rambis, so I probably won't go down. Aaron Aflalo had a Aaron Aflalo game, 7, 5, and 2 on 3 of 11 shooting. Did add a block though, so that's a little bit of a surprise. And Jimmer's back. Jimmer played 2 minutes and had 3 points. He hit his only shot, which was a 3-pointer. Do not add Jimmer in fantasy leagues. I I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm not. The next game, the Indiana Pacers and the Miami Heat, Paul George was not good with his shot. 11 of 24, which is actually better than some of his other nights, but 11 points, 4 assists, 4 triples and 3 steals. That's a fairly full line. Miles Turner got it done, 16 and 5 with 2 blocks, and so did Jan Mahimi, 11 and 6 with 2 blocks. Both of those guys played 31 minutes. They both have to be owned in basically every league. Mahinmi is on a real roll. For some reason, to start the season, Frank Vogel was limiting his minutes. Despite him playing well, I'm only playing him 25 or 24 minutes, even when he wasn't injured. Now he's unleashing him, playing him 30 minutes, and he's looking like a real NBA player. Joe Young, 17 minutes for Joe, 10 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists. Remember that I love Joe Young. He is going to be a decent player. He's a real big dynasty target of mine. So whoever owns him in the Red Rock Dynasty League, feel free to pass him my way. I think he's going to be a very, very useful point guard in this league. Monte Ellis was bad, 7-4-3 with a steal and a block. George Hill, not much better, 1-4-3 with a steal. Now, those two sucked terribly. They still played 41 minutes for Monte, 37 for George Hill. They combined to shoot 2 of 24. George Hill did not hit a shot, and Monte went 2 of 17. That is absolutely horrific. Lavoie Allen went 8-7 in his 22 minutes, and Jordan Hill went 6-3 in his 22. CJ Miles, as anticipated, sat out with that calf problem. On the Heat side of things, massive, massive minutes for Hassan Whiteside. 19-18, 6 blocks, also 3 of 4 from the free throw line. You know what you're getting from Whiteside. It's big blocks, it's big rebounds, it's inconsistent emotional outbursts. That's where he really excels. And Goran Dragic, loving the fact that he's moving up in the pecking order here. 24-8-5 after such a slow start to the season. He is coming home very, very strong. Amari Stoudemire started. They're still playing Whiteside off the bench. Not sure how long. I don't know what the point of that is. Stoudemire 4-5. He can be dropped if you're still owning him, even in 14-team leagues. Luol Deng has to be owned despite the poor shooting. 5 of 18, but 13-16. That's 3 straight double-doubles for Luol. And not to be outdone, Dwayne Wade shot worse. He went 4 of 21 for 16-5-3 with a steal and a block. So great counting stats, horrible efficiency. Gerald Green started in this one, and they moved Justice Winslow to the bench. Green missed all 5 of his shots, played 18 minutes, while Winslow played 40 off the bench. Green is not someone I'm targeting in your standard leagues because he's really just not awesome. Beno Udrih only lasted 6 minutes before succumbing to a left foot injury. He is not the most durable player. Boston and Minnesota. Jay Crowder, I touched on him earlier. He had a career night, 27-9-3, 2 steals and 4 triples, while Avery Bradley joined him by knocking down 4 triples, going 22-2-2 with 3 steals. And a quick note on Jay Crowder. He's only owned in, 83% of leagues. That's still 17% too low. I don't know why he's owned in so few. Marcus Smart turned it on, 17-4-7, 4 steals. I love what this guy is going to be able to do in a few years. I think he can be a real fantasy star. Well, not maybe not a star, a real fantasy mid-round solid contributor. And he's pretty much getting to that as is. Evan Turner still got 26 minutes, 9-9-4. He continues to put up late-round value. And Jared Salinger got 30 minutes, going 12-7-5. Isaiah Thomas had 18 points, had 9 assists, but 8 of 20 shooting is not great. Didn't take a single free throw, which is a little bit weird as well. And Amir Johnson can't get 20 minutes. 15 minutes for him here. 2 points, a block, and a rebound and an assist. There's no point holding on to Amir Johnson, I don't think, in 12-team leagues. With Salinger playing the bulk of the minutes there, Jonas Jerebkov got 22, Tyler Zeller got 14. Even with Kelly Olynyk out, then they run smaller, playing Jay Crowder at the 4. That gets Evan Turner onto the court. They've got Bradley, Thomas, Smart, all those guys who can play minutes. They're just going to run small. Johnson's going to play some, but he's not going to play enough, and we'll see. Brad Stevens could change that tomorrow, which he does quite often, but for now, not a must-own player. The Minnesota Timberwolves got the victory. They scored 124 points. Just a quick reminder, in the last game that they played, they had 61 points to the end of the third quarter and finished with 90, and that was a game that Tayshaun Prince started and played in excess of 20 minutes while limiting Gorgui Dieng to 24. In this game, in the alternate starter game, it's not only alternate starters, Sam Mitchell, it's complete alternate rotations. Look, that makes no sense. Tell me one, like, I hope there's one person who can defend the notion of having alternate rotations every second game. It's not matchup based. It's not personnel based. It's not development based. It's dickheadedry. That's all it is. It's complete nuff-nuffish. I can't think of a word. Can someone justify why you would play alternate rotations every second game? Tayshaun Prince moved back to the bench here. He played 5 minutes. They got destroyed in those 5 minutes. He had 0 points. Great. Play your better players. Let them develop together. Gorgui Dieng back in the starting lineup. 37 minutes, 17 and 12. Not back in the starting lineup, back into starters' minutes. 17 and 12, a triple one, 7 of 10 shooting. Has to be owned everywhere. Has to be played, Sam Mitchell. Zach LaVine, 32 minutes. Now, I don't care if LaVine starts or doesn't start. He needs 30 minutes. But my issue with moving him to the bench and starting Prince is that it cut Jeng's minutes out. It could cut LaVine's minutes out next time. It just means that Prince is going to get 20 minutes when he doesn't need them. LaVine went 16-5-3 with 4 triples. He should be earned. Rick Rubio went 15-8-8 with a steal. Big night from Rubio, including 9 of 11 from the free throw line, which is great. Andy Wiggins, not his greatest night. 17 points, 4 assists. Still got a steal and a block, but he has these tendencies to have these horrible shooting nights. 7 of 12 from the free throw line, that's really impactful. 5 of 11 from the field, not so bad. But when you have a high volume, poor free throw shooting night, it's a real odd thing. We also saw Tyus Jones back in the rotation, so that's good. But again, when Tayshaun Prince plays, nah, we're not going to go that route. Jones played 16 minutes and had 9 points with 2 rebounds and an assist. He is another guy. Put it into the 2015 rookie class of point guards that I do really like. I like a lot of these guys, excluding D'Angelo Russell, who I think is all right, but Cam Payne, Jerry and Grant, DeLon Wright, Joe Young, Tyus Jones. I like all of these guys. I think they can all develop into serious NBA players. No one as high as what I think that Cam Payne can do, though. On the Lakers and the Bucks, Jordy Clarkson, 25 minutes for Clarkson, 15, 3-3, 2 steals and 4 triples. Yeah, the minutes were obviously restricted in this game because the game, it was a weird one. It's a weird one because Byron Scott's coaching most of the time, so the rotations don't make a lot of sense, but Clarkson was limited. D'Angelo Russell got 29 minutes. He went 9-5-4, only took 5 shots, which is weird. Nick Young played 24 minutes, cool. Marcelo Huertas played 12 minutes. I haven't seen this guy since December, it feels like. He played 12 minutes. Ryan Kelly played 8 minutes. Tariq Black came back and played 12 minutes. Byron Scott was just emptying the bench. You go, everyone just get in there. Don't worry about developing the young guys. Huertas, you're the future of this team. You get in there and play 12 minutes. Come on, Ryan Kelly. Here's your 8 minutes. Although I don't mind that because he's a young player. Nick Young, come on, you get 24 minutes. You deserve to be out there even when you're shooting 5 of 12. That's what it's all about, Laker fans. Laker Nation, unite. Championship going to be run behind pick and rolls from Marcelo Huertas and Nick Young. Not that Nick Young can ever run a pick and roll, but you know what I'm saying. Kobe was his usual inefficient self, 3 of 12 for 15 points with 5 rebounds. And Lou Williams went back to 30 minutes off the bench, 14, 6, and 4 with 2 steals, even though he shot 2 of 12. So the worse you shoot, according to Byron Scott, the more minutes and the more shots you should take. Makes sense, because this guy is the king of reverse logic. Larry Nance has dealing with issues with his knee again. He only played 10 minutes, and Scott had another baffling quote. I think it was, he'll either play tomorrow or we're considering shutting him down for the season. Cool. No in-betweens. No like, oh, maybe he'll miss a week. No, it's either playing or he's done. We're shutting him down. That's a big possibility with Nance. It's not going to affect too much. It just means that Julius Randle's going to lock in at more of a 30-minute role, and Brandon Bass will get that mid-20s role. Now, Randle was terrible, 5 of 7 on horrible shooting, and this is the downside of him. He's still far from my favorite fantasy player, and he's probably, on a 13-man roster, he's probably your 11th or 12th best player. That's sort of where I rank him, despite, again, the thing that Randle is in terms of overratedness is that his two best categories are the two highest number categories, points and rebounds. And he'll go for 12 and 8 or 12 and 10. People go, ooh, look at that, double digits in two columns. And he'll have zeros everywhere else, where someone else might go 9 points and 6 rebounds and have 3 steals and 3 blocks. but it doesn't look as sexy as having two double digits in two different columns, and that's where he is going to get overrated and overdrafted in plenty of leagues throughout his career. On to the Bucks. Greg Monroe off the bench, 27 minutes, 12 and 8, 2 steals and a block, while Michael Carter-Williams got 35 off the bench and went 10, 5 and 2 with 2 steals and a block as well with his usual poor shooting. Steve Novak made his Buck debut 1 minute for no points. We don't need to worry too much about him. And OJ Mayo got 24 minutes as the starter. Now, he was limited by foul trouble, so that allowed Michael Carter-Williams to play extra. 12, 3 and 4 for Mayo with 4 triples. He's definitely coming into the 12-team consideration bracket. Not a must-own by any stretch, but definitely someone that you have to start looking at because he's putting up some numbers, at least until Jared Bayless comes out back, and he's being relied upon more and more by Kidd. Jabari Parker looks to have figured things out to a degree. 15, 9 and 4, a steal and a block. The last couple of weeks have been fantastic for Jabari, and a guy that I was really down on to start the season, but absolutely flying at the moment. Chris Middleton, 18, 2 and 6 with 2 steals, while Miles Plumlee, starting in place of Greg Monroe, played 21 minutes, went 14 and 5, and had a block on 7 of 7 shooting. Missed all 4 of his free throws, and he is more of a 16-team league guy, but if he's going, or maybe even 14, but if he's playing 20 minutes a night, which he shouldn't, but he is, and he gets you a block or 2 blocks and can be efficient and grab some rebounds, there's some value in all of that. The Golden State Warriors and the Atlanta Hawks. The Warriors had a big lead. The Hawks came back, took the lead in the fourth quarter, but the Warriors end up getting the win by 10 points. Some huge fantasy lines here. Steph Curry, 36, 6 and 8 with 5 triples and 3 steals on excellent shooting. Klay Thompson went 27, 2 and 3 with 5 triples and 3 steals in his 37 minutes. Andrew Bogut had a big game. Only had 3 points, but 11 boards, 4 assists and 5 blocks in 29 minutes. So hard to predict what's going to happen with his minutes. It's 29 one night, it's 18 the next, it's 14 the next, it's 21 the next. He is all over the place. It makes him a bit of a nightmare for 12-team leagues and for DFS. Draymond Green only scored 6 points because he shot 2 of 10, but had 14 boards, 9 assists, 2 steals and a block. And Harry Barnes continues to be underwhelming. 14 points with 4 boards and 3 triples. Maintain it, he's not a 12-team league guy. He's just not. Al Horford was massive, 23, 16, and 6, a 3, 3 steals, 5 blocks on 10 of 20 shooting. Probably a little bit stiff not to be the monstrous line of the night, to be honest, but a big game from Al. Dennis Schroeder went back to the bench, played just 18 minutes, but what an 18 minutes. 18 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 triples. And people will look at it, do I hold on to Dennis Schroeder? Well, if there's no one else that you want to go and grab, sure, but 18 points is great. But when's he going to shoot 8 of 12? Is that going to be a realistic thing for him to do? I'd probably say no, considering that he's a 43% shooter on the season. He's at 44% over the last 2 months. Yes, he's at 47 over the last month, so that's definitely improved. He's a top 25 player over the last 2 weeks. 19-point average, 4 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 2.5 three-pointers. He's shooting 48% from 3 in that time. That is set to come down. He's not a 48% three-point shooter. He's not a 59% shooter from the field. These things all have to come down. His assists are probably a little bit above average as well. Not too much, but slightly above what his season numbers are. There's no one to drop, or you've got someone to drop and you want to add him, sure. But if he's going to play 18 minutes a night, I can't see these numbers being sustainable because this shooting percentage is not sustainable. Him averaging 10 assists per 36 minutes is probably not sustainable. It's not something that he's at 8 this season. He was at 7.6 last season. But 10's a 25% bump. It's big. I see this as being a real hot streak for him. And you know how much I love him. I think he's going to be a fantastic fantasy player. And I think he's going to be I think he's going to surprise a lot of people in real life. Because a lot of people who are real life basketball analysts don't love his game. I think he's going to be a real decent player who can really, really grow into his role. I sort of think that he's a must-own fantasy guy, though, because he is for now, because obviously this is great production, but can you expect it in 18 minutes every night? The answer is a clear no, despite his recent production lately, and it's fueled by extraordinary shooting percentages. Jeff Teague still played 30 minutes, 16 points, 6 assists, a steal, a block, and 2 triples. So basically they played only when the other one was off the court. So he's not getting in the minutes next to Teague either. And that's another key thing. Paul Millsap, 11-7 with a 111. Not his best night. Cole Korver, I touched on already. And Kent Bazemore. If you weren't convinced that Kent Bazemore is not good, I think it's about time. 16 minutes for Bazemore, 4-2-1. The start of the season from Kent Bazemore is still one of the most mystifying things to me in the last couple of years of basketball. He is just not a good player. He was playing really, really well. He was putting up fantastic fantasy lines. And I reckon every night for about 2 months, I said, like, how is this happening? This guy is not good. It took him 2-3 months to justify my thoughts, but he's not good. He is not a must-hold player to me. He's losing minutes to Tim Hardaway Jr. He just looks lost out there. He can't score. He can't shoot. He's never been able to shoot. This was a fluke 2 months of the season for him, and it's finally catching up as things tend to do. Not much else to talk about on the Hawks, I don't think. Oh, Tim Hardaway, 26 minutes. That's interesting, but I don't think there's much to be too excited about there. Speaking of not too much to be excited about, the Phoenix Suns and Los Angeles Clippers. I cannot work out what the Suns do half the time. I just don't understand it. They went with the starting lineup again of Ronnie Price, Devin Booker, PJ Tucker, Chris Humphries, and Alex Len. Archie Goodwin has moved solely to a shooting guard role, basically. He played 38 minutes, though, off the bench. He scored 20 points and did not much else and went 6 of 19. He had 0 assists. His role as a point guard is done. He is still, look, yes, 38 minutes and 20 points is great, but Devin Booker fouled out in 26 minutes. Devin Booker shot 2 of 10, and he's having a real stinking stretch at the moment. With Goodwin, you can still own him, but if there's someone else out there that you want, I would rather drop someone off at the tail end of their run and grab someone at the start of their run rather than hold on too late and miss that guy. So I mentioned yesterday I dropped Goodwin for Mac in leagues just because I think that the rise is happening with Mac. If you got Goodwin, I'd drop him for Schroeder and see what happens there. Although I've just detailed what I think about Schroeder. But Goodwin, if his role is going to be backup shooting guard, I don't love it. Ronnie Price as the starter went 12-5-3, had 2 triples, 2 steals, and a block. That is for 14-team leagues. It is maybe for 12-team leagues, but not with Brandon Knight, hopefully, on the return. And Phil Pressey played 28 minutes for the second night in a row. He had 4 points and 10 assists. He's only on a 10-day contract, so he's more a deeper league sort of guy. I'm not speculatively adding him in your standard leagues because, again, Brandon Knight is going to be coming back. John Lua, I'm pretty much done with him. 19 minutes, 8-6, a steal and a block. That's still relatively productive, but again, is it going to continue in these limited minutes? And Mirza Teletovic went 13-6 with 3 triples in 23 minutes. He is a guy that is a 14-team league guy and can be owned in your 12s. Alex Len continues to be good. Shooting percentage wasn't. 5 of 16, that's not good, but 14-8 with a couple of steals. Can't wait to see what they do when Tyson Chandler comes back. Based on the fact that they're starting Ronnie Price and Chris Humphries, they will probably do the wrong thing and start Chandler over Len, but I'm holding out hope. Speaking of Humphries, he started and played 12 minutes and went 4 of 7. He is not a standard league target either, and PJ Tucker is rapidly fading from that conversation, playing just 21 minutes, going 2-5. This Suns team has been an absolute mess for basically the whole year. It is devolving even worse. When your starting lineup has Ronnie Price, Chris Humphries in it, you're struggling. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but that's what it is. Price is the guy I'm just going to keep an eye on, and I want to see what happens with Len. Len should be owned everywhere, and to be honest, Devin Booker, despite that hot streak he had, at the moment, he's really coming into, like, do I have to hold on to this guy mode? Because when was the last time he had a good game? It feels like it's been a while. I'm going to bring up his stats there on the screen for you guys to have a look at, peek into the Basketball Monster stats page. There we go. In the last 2 weeks, he's the 189th ranked player. That's terrible. In the last month, 144. That's not good for standard leagues. In 34 minutes, yes, he's averaging 14.7 points, but a poor field goal percentage, nice threes, but just not doing enough in other areas. I'm still probably holding him, but is he my best 10 players? I would almost assuredly say not. For the Clippers, they spanked the Suns, so minutes were spread all over the place. Jeff Green, decent night, 24 points, 18-5-2 with 2 triples and a block. I think his role will steadily increase these next couple of games, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him. My boy Cole Aldrich, 8-8 in 14 minutes, 3 blocks. Again, remember Cole Aldrich. Wes Johnson played 28 minutes, 11-8, 2 triples, 2 steals, 1 block, fantastic production. That's definite 12-team league production. I'm just worried that his role is going to drop off a little bit, but he's not an absolute must drop or anything like that. Jamal Crawford, terrible. 17 points, sorry. I wish it was 17 points. 17 minutes, 2 points on 0-4 shooting, absolutely nothing else. He had been red hot, but clearly not so red hot in this one. Congratulations to Alex Stepherson, who scored his first NBA points in his 7 minutes and got a post-game interview on the court, so that was pretty cool. All right, we are done for the game recap. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to look at DFS action for Tuesday.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see.
Games on Tuesday. There are only five of them, but that's a pretty nice amount for a DFS slate. The first game looks like it could have quite a bit of fantasy value if you know where to look. It is the Orlando Magic and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Magic are currently favored by 6 points and the total is 209. Nick Stauskas is dealing with shin soreness. He is probable. That's a bit of a worry considering he had a stress reaction to start the season. Let's keep our eye on that. He's not impacting too much fantasy-wise. The point guard position. Brandon Jennings is at 3,900. He's played, in preference to Lord Alfred Payton, the last two games, played 25 minutes and put up 26 FanDuel points in the last one. At 3,900, I'm all for it. In a matchup against Philly, I think that he can be used in tournaments. I think that you can have relative confidence in him in a cash game to at least go for 22 or 23. He's not going to go 35 points or anything like that. But if you're looking for 5x value out of a point guard, I think he does it for you. Ish Smith at 6,500 has been brutally bad, like terrible recently. I would throw him into a tournament because he does have 45 point upside, but he's averaging under 20 in his last three. He's put up 5.7 in the last game. I don't think he can be as brutally bad as he was in that one, but he's hard to rely on in cash. Isaiah Cannon at minimum salary, probably not. And Lord Alfred Payton at 5,500, I'm not going near him until I can get my assurances that he is going to get back to 30 minutes. At shooting guard, Evan Fournier is at 5,400. He has been fantastic lately. He's averaging over 30 in his last five games. His lowest score in his last five games is 27 points, which would give you 5x value. And against the Philadelphia 76ers, I'm pretty confident that Evan Fournier can have a decent game here. I think he can be a cash and tournament player. Vic Oladipo, 6,800, blew up in his last game, dropped 46. He's averaging 35 across the last three, 33 across the last five. Beautiful matchup. If I'm picking one of them, I pick Fournier because I'm saving $1,400. But Oladipo is a pretty nice play as well. At small forward, Bob Cove comes into consideration here. He's at 5,000. The minutes haven't been there, but the production's been okay, and the Magic have been pretty subpar against small forwards recently as well. He is averaging over 25 in his last five. He's had a 42-point game in his last five as well. He can be a little bit volatile, and so maybe you want to restrict him to tournaments, but I'm not overly against using him in cash. For the power forwards, a couple of in terms of low price power forwards, there's not much on the board today. But Jeremy Grant, now not looking at him in cash, but in a tournament setting at 4,800, the Magic do allow some guys to get some lock shots, and he excels at that. He's averaging 28 minutes across his last five games. He's only giving you 23 points, But all it takes is a night for him to get hot shooting, which he can have. He's a guy who will have a 20% shooting night and an 80% shooting night. And if it gets hot and happens and he gets you five blocks, then the value definitely comes from him. I don't mind him as a punt play in a tournament. Nerlens Noel at 6,800 was dealing with some issues, foul problems in the last game. That's going to suppress his ownership, I reckon. I think that in a similar vein to Grant, there's going to be some defensive numbers coming his way. Steals and blocks, rebounds. He's been able to shoot the ball at an incredible rate recently. Nerlens at 6,800, I feel like 33 to 35 points feels like it's a relative fait accompli. Aaron Gordon at 6,100, his lowest score across his last five games, Aaron Gordon, is 30.3 points. That is fantastic when you're spending 6,100. He is not necessarily a lock, but one of the better power forward options on the board. In fact, Grant, Noel, and Gordon are all pretty awesome options, with Gordon feeling, you know, one of the more solid guys out there. Ersan Ilyasova, the most he's played in the two games for the Magic is 21 minutes. That's not enough for me to get excited. Rishon Holmes, Kyle Landry, Jason Smith, and Andrew Nicholson don't bear much talking. Hey, just a quick thing. Remember the Sixers signed Elton Brand? He hasn't played a single minute for them, but he signed them. He signed for them. Hope he's having a steadying veteran locker room presence. Exactly what Tayshaun Prince, Kevin Garnett, Nikola Pekovic, and Andre Miller should be doing for the Timberwolves. Not playing 20 minutes a night. Brand has been signed, has not set foot on the court. I don't mind that. Nick Vucevic, 8,300. He's been a fantasy monster. He's averaging almost 42 points across his last five games. The defense of Jahlil Okafor does not scare me one bit. 40 points should be his aim here, and at 8,300, you'd take that. Okafor at 6,600, he's been really good as well, and that's not an exorbitant salary. An average of 37 across his last five, definitely someone that can be considered as well. So all in all, that Orlando and Philadelphia game, there is a lot of fantasy value in that one. The next game, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Washington Wizards. The Wizards are favored by five. We've got a big total of 213. A couple of wing players for the Wizards we need to look at. Gary Neal is dealing with a thigh issue, and we might finally see the return of Allen Anderson, his first game for the season. He's not a big name, clearly, but he just adds wing depth. That hopefully it means if Neal and Anderson play, we get much less Garrett Temple. For the point guards in this one, all the value is tied. Not necessarily the value, all the production is tied to Jrue Holiday and John Wall. Holiday is now at 7,800. He has been killing value, though. 45 average across his last five. A minimum score of 37. 7,800 is getting pretty high, but it's not a complete write-off. I'd be okay with using at that salary. Johnny Wall's at 9,800. Holiday is out averaging him over the last five and over the last three. He's got a higher floor, Drew. So, and in terms of matchup wise, the Wizards have been allowing point guards to play well. The Pelicans have been restricting opposition point guards. If I'm picking between these two guys, I'm saving the $2,000 and I'm taking Jrue Holiday. Norris Cole, he can go do a tag team with Kent Bazemore. He's terrible. 4,800. I'm not spending that on him. With the shooting guards, Bryce DeJean-Jones continues to start for the Pelicans, continues to do nothing. Yeah, maybe put him in a tournament at minimum salary, but that's about it. Brad Beal at 6,000, he'd played less than 30 minutes in the last three games because it was a triple back-to-back. He should be back starting, he should be back getting 31 to 32 minutes. And at 6,000, can you rely upon him to get 30 points? I don't feel like I can. Gary Neal, Allen Anderson, Garrett Temple, no thanks for any of those guys. At small forward, Otto Porter, 5,300, has not been getting the job done, though. That's not a high price tag, but hasn't reached value once in the last five games. Probably steer clear of him. Alonzo G, cool, that's a joke. And at power forward, Tony Davis, he's at 10,300 now. Remember that time where I said, this is exciting, Davis is under 10,000, smash him, smash him, smash him. It's over now. He's at 10,300. He dropped 89 FanDuel points in the last game. That's obviously ridiculous. He's averaging 50 points across his last five. Now, there's a couple of things I think with Davis here. I think with in your lower price contests, his ownership is going to be really high. In your higher price contest, you're going to get people who are more likely to be contrarian, people who are also more likely to be not playing Davis. The guy screwed me too many times. And I think his ownership might be a little bit lower. This is not a tough matchup for him against the Wizards. At 10,300, can he get 50 points? Yeah. Is he going to go 59 and 20 again? I'll have a wager and say probably no. But I'm still pretty confident he gets close to 50 points. Not a tough matchup. Ryan Anderson, Omar Asik is currently doubtful with an ankle injury, so Anderson will likely see more minutes as they put Davis at center. More at 5,200, sure, in a tournament, in a cash game, not a chance. I would want anything to do with Ryan Anderson. Markieff Morris at 5,400, I need to see him have a bigger role before I invest in him. And Jared Dudley's at 4,600. The risk with him is if Morris gets that bigger role, Dudley's role likely shrinks. So I can't take that chance with rostering Dudley. At center, Marcin Gortat's at 7,100. I think this is a prime spot for him to have a very big game. The Pelicans are not good, and if they're without Asik, that's just one less big body there. Alexey Ajinsa, I know he can go big. Normally it happens when Davis is out, so the absence of Omar Asik doesn't make me too excited about Alexey Ajinsa, but just a name to maybe have a look at, but probably not. The Sacramento Kings and the Denver Nuggets. This is a rematch of a game that took place a couple of days ago. Injury-wise, there's a few to pay attention to here. Marco Bellinelli is back after his dental work. We do not know if Omri Caspi is, though. He practiced, so he will likely be back. Rajon Rondo is probable with a toe issue, and Ben McLemore is probable with a wrist. Those guys will play. DeMarcus Cousins is the interesting one. He's dealing with a sore tailbone. Obviously, that's a massive issue if he doesn't play. It's not the last game of the night, but it's still obviously not the first game of the night, so it is a little bit risky. We obviously need to check to hear what other news we hear about Cousins throughout the day as to whether he's a guy to roster. On the Denver side of things, Jameer Nelson with that wrist problem is questionable, and Ken Faried is questionable still with his basketball ability. Sorry, no. He's questionable with his illness, so we need to check on those two things. At point guard, I don't really mind if Nelson plays. I think Emmanuel Mudiay is still going to get 30 minutes. He's priced at 5,600. I'm relatively confident against the up-tempo, poor defense Kings that 29 to 30 fantasy points can come his way, so I think he's a good option. Rajon Rondo's at 9,200. That is real expensive, but he's been getting close, or he's been exceeding that value. He's averaging 48 across his last five. His minimum score is over 40 in his last five. Not a completely terrible guy to have a look at, especially against a Denver team that is up-tempo and poor in defense. 5,000 for Darren Collison. He's been right on that value for the last five games or so, really consistently around that 25 points. Not much of a tournament option, more of a cash game play, but relatively consistent player. At shooting guard, Gaz Harris, 4,700. The minutes have been there for him. The production hasn't been awesome, but this is the Kings we're talking about. Shooting guards can have big nights. He's at 4,700. 25 to 28 points is in range for him, and that would be a nice return on your salary. Will Barton, I think if Nelson's out, Barton gets close to 30 minutes again. A positive matchup for him. He's at 6,100. He's been playing okay, but he needs to get to 30 points, which I'm not all that confident in him. Ben McLemore, Marco Bellinelli, Jim Anderson, and Seth Curry are not guys that I'm all that interested in for the Kings. I do like Danilo Gallinari on Denver as a small forward, taking on the Kings again. This is a beautiful matchup for him. He's at 7,100. He just needs to get to 35 points. I'm not thinking that's going to be all that tough for him. Rudy Gay, on the other hand, at 7,100. If I'm spending 7,100 here, it is definitely going to be on Danilo Gallinari. Omri Caspi, even if he plays, I'm not all that interested in using him. With the power forwards, Ken Faried, if he plays, don't really care. He just can't get enough minutes to be productive. Willie Cauley-Stein at 4,200. Yeah, I'd throw him into a tournament, especially if Cousins happens to be out, because he will get a minutes bump. As for now, he just can't seem to stay on the court long enough to have any sort of impact. The other guy to look at if Ken Faried misses is Darrell Arthur at 3,500. He'd be strictly a tournament guy, but the matchup could not get any tastier if Faried happened to be out. At center, Nikola Jokic is the guy we all want to look at. He's at 5,600. He is quite up and down. Throw him into a tournament, but this is an interesting spot for him. The last time he played the Kings, he struggled with Boogie big time, so he's probably a guy I'll steer clear of. Boogie, on the other hand, dropped to 68 on the Nuggets the last time they played. He is averaging 48 across his last five. It is a shitload of cash to put on him at 10,900, but I feel confident that you can get 50 points back from him, you know, relatively comfortably. The next game, the Houston Rockets and the Utah Jazz. The Jazz are favored by 5. The total here is 202 points. Injury-wise, Terrence Jones is probable from that car accident concussion, so we might see him back. They're going to have to ease him back in, according to JB Bickerstaff, to knock some of the rust off. That'll be interesting. Donatas Motiejunas is back in Houston. He likely won't play, and we do not know if Marcus Thornton will play either. Sam Decker got recalled from the D League, so a guy that had that back surgery to start the year, rookie, hasn't seen the court at all. Maybe we see some uh, Maybe we'll see some Decker if there's no Jones, Monteunis, and Thornton, but I don't think that situation's likely to occur. At point guard, Shelvin Mack, 3,700, dropped 29.6 in his Utah Jazz debut in 24 minutes. I think at 3,700, he is a great cash option. He is a great tournament option. He is going to get 20-plus minutes. I'm pretty confident with the way that Quinn Snyder has been talking about him. They are going to use him, and they clearly used him over Hal Neto and Trey Burke in his debut. Ty Lawson, I don't want anything to do with, nor Trey Burke or Neto, even though they're all priced at either 35 or 3600. Pat Beverley's at 47. He has some intrigue, but in a slow-paced matchup against the Jazz, I think you can probably do better in other areas, like Shelvin Mack. With the shooting guards, Rod Hood is at 5900. Feels probably a little bit expensive given the way he's been playing great, but at 5900, I'm not sure I want to spend that. Jim Harden's at 10900. He's great, but 10,900 against the Jazz team, slow pace, good defense. I'll spend it on John Wall. I'll spend it on Boogie Cousins. I'll spend it on Rajon Rondo. I'll spend it on Damian Lillard. I'll spend that 10,000 on someone else. Chris Johnson, Marcus Thornton, no real interest for me. At small forward, Gordy Hayward's at 7,600. He's averaging 33 across his last five. That's not quite 5x value, but the bump of playing the Rockets should push him to 37, 38, that sort of range. Corey Brewer, I don't want much to do with. 6,000 for Trevor Reza. Yeah, I'm fine with it. He dropped 44 in the last game. I think he's going to play a lot of minutes. It's not a great matchup, so that would maybe steer clear of him, but he's not a complete write-off to me. At power forward, I'm definitely not using Terrence Jones. Derek Favors at 7,400. Rockets bump is clearly in play. 35 points should be his minimum. Fine using him. Trev Booker, probably nothing. Trey Lyles, same. And the Houston triumvirate of Clint Capella, Terrence Jones, and Josh Smith. I don't think we need to care about those guys. Dwight Howard versus Rudy Gobert at center. Gobert is at 7,300. He is $600 cheaper than Dwight Howard. I would rather have Gobert save that cash and hopefully get a little bit more production. Now, Howard has been more productive recently, but going up against Gobert, it's not a good situation for Howard to put up those extra numbers. Brooklyn and Portland is the last game of the night. The Blazers, yes, the Blazers, that team that people thought would be crap and terrible, is favored by 11.5 points. The total is 210 points. Dame Lillard is going to be the guy on everyone's watch list at 9,500 playing against the Nets. He's been putting up 30 points. Real points regularly. Now, he had a massive game in the last one, but only resulted in 39 fantasy points. And that's a bit of the risk with Lillard. Yes, he's averaging 49 across his last five, 54 across his last three, and at 9,500. I'm all for using him. But there is a certain amount of risk associated with him. He's not as rock solid as some of the other high price guys. Still fine in this matchup against the Nets. Don Sloan's at 4,500. Yeah, the role for him is secure, but the production at 4,500 is not something I'm interested in. With shooting guards, CJ McCollum is at 7,400. He dropped 42 in the last one. He's averaging 33 across his last five. He's sort of, thereabouts, but not someone I'm going to overly invest in. Alan Crabb, no thanks. Gerald Henderson, 4,200, also no thanks. 5,300 for Joe Johnson. I'm just not going to spend that on him unless he goes, I want him under 5,000, especially in this sort of a matchup. At small forward, Al-Farouq Aminu at 4,700. He's just doing nothing. This is as good a matchup as it gets, so maybe I'd throw him into a tournament and things work out, but probably not. I would rather spend $300 less, put Mo Harkless in at 4,400. He's been getting consistent minutes. Again, the matchup's beautiful. He's averaging 32 across his last three games in just 26 minutes. I think they're going to continue to give him pretty decent run, if not more run, with the way that he's playing and the way that they're playing with him in the lineup. So look for Mo Harkless at 4,400. Bojan Bogdanovic, I don't think I really need to deal with him too much. At power forward, Thad Young is at 6,900. Yeah, I don't mind using Thad Young at that salary. As for the Blazers guys, Ed Davis, Noah Vonleh, no interest for me with them. At center, Brook Lopez is at 8,600. The salary is it's expensive, but he's averaging 42 across his last three. I'm not all that keen at 8,600 against the Blazers, who have been restricting opposition centers pretty well lately. Mace Plumlee is at 5,300. He said he had a great game in the last one. Before that, he had been subpar. He is not someone I'm looking to. And Myers Leonard is almost falling out of the rotation, as unbelievable as that is, with the play of Mo Harkless, so we're not going to want to use him. Let's look at the DFS picks for Tuesday. At point guard, Shelvin Mack, 3,700, Emmanuel Mudiay, 5,600, and Drew Holiday at 78. At shooting guard, Gaz Harris, 4,700, Evan Fournier at 5,400, and I don't like any high-priced shooting guards. Small forwards, Bob Cove, 5,000, Danilo Gallinari, 71, and Gordo Hayward at 76. The power forwards, Jeremy Grant, 48, Nerlens Noel, 68, and Anthony Davis, 10,300. And the centers, I didn't touch on this guy before, but Yusuf Nurkic is at 3,700. It is strictly a tournament option for Nurkic. Throw him in, maybe something happens if Jokic is dealing with foul trouble, if Lavernier is getting pushed around. Nurkic can sort of handle Cousins, so he'd be a guy that maybe they go to and hope that he can stay in there and put up some numbers, but there's no cash reliability there at all. Rudy Gobert is at 73, and Boogie comes in at 10,900. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at redrock_bball and on the Facebook page. Join in like those two guys with those conversations before Josh and Justin. Facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Basketballmonster.com. Every day I've got a free article that goes up on there, the morning update, talking about every game that gets played and highlighting the key things for your seasonal leagues. Check that out. Check out all our DFS tools, our seasonal long tools, heaps of stuff over on Basketball Monster, and all the podcasts and articles on hardwoodparoxysm.com. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.